Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
And from high atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge to be had everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I utter these words to you on Tuesday, July 6th, 2010, readying a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A suspected DUI driver hits the Hawthorne Bridge. A firework mishap injures a Vancouver man and his son.
Awesome.
And a member of the Manson family may be getting out on parole.
Be still, my beating heart. As always, my friends, have no doubt that the conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed you are about to hear will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. Also remember, you can listen on your mobile or handheld device at mobile.pdx.fm. Mobile.pdx.fm. Prepare yourselves. I give you Legion of News.
I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, July 6th, 2010. A suspected drunk driver hit and damaged parts of the Hawthorne Bridge, halting traffic for nearly 3 hours on Monday. Police said the driver of a truck was headed westbound on the bridge at about 5:45 p.m. when he stopped and began driving backward, hitting the crossing arms, which were in the down position. Crews closed all lanes of the bridge traffic while they worked to repair the crossing arms.
This is the Hawthorne Bridge. Wait, this is... It's back up for just 1 second. I was distracted by a thing. So he's going over the Hawthorne Bridge, but the arms are down because the bridge is going to go up? I'm so confused here.
I have to tell you, I'm not entirely sure what crossing arms are. Because they're supposed to be the things that are telling you...
This is the thing that says the bridge is going to go up. Don't be crossing, right? Is that what we're talking about?
I would imagine so.
You don't know, do you?
I don't know.
That was the best, just sort of the casual, screw it.
We've just started the day, and already I'm just being called on my lack of knowledge about the news I read.
Just say it confidently. No one will question you. So
yes, Rick, those are the bars that come down.
Which way was he? Well, not that it matters, yeah. I guess. But, I mean, the only bars that come down on the Hawthorne Bridge are the ones that they put down before the bridge is raised. So I'm wondering if this is a thing where the bridge was about to be raised to make way for a ship of some kind, and he just didn't feel like waiting. And he just decided to go across.
Except it sounds like he backed into them. So I'm not sure.
Well, unless he had tried to cross, and then it's all very confusing. If he had tried to sort of skedaddle past the arms as they were coming down, skated just underneath it, and then the arm came down just behind him. In other words, if he tried to sneak over the bridge before they... You know, because they do it in stages. They block the lights flash, then the arm comes down, then the bridge lifts.
If you do a Google search for crossing bars bridge, there is no return on that. None. So I think whoever wrote this story just made up a phrase.
Oh, good for you.
For the things. Because it doesn't seem to actually be used by anyone.
Well, my guess would be... Hold on a second here. My guess would be that the lights came on. He decided that, hey, now I can beat this across. You know, I don't have to wait for the ship. I can make it over in time. And then he tried to do that, realized he wasn't actually going to be able to get across because the bars on the other side had already come down. Tried to back up, not realizing the bars behind him had come down. And that is when he backed into the thing. And then the cops had to be summoned or whatever. And also, he was apparently drunk. So the man says. Wait, is it he was drunk or is it like they believe alcohol may have been a factor?
It said suspected DUII. Driving. I don't know why there are two I's.
Driving while under the impairment of or intoxicated. Driving while impaired or intoxicated. Because they are not the same thing legally. Are you over there Googling the bridge?
I'm looking up different stories to see if somebody else explains it better, but no one does.
Here's the thing. You stress out way too much about having facts and being accurate about this. The thing
we're
I have learned.
We're a news program, Rick Emerson. We're supposed to be sharing facts.
No, I understand that. But the thing I have learned is that if you are wrong, or at least not wholly correct, the audience will correct you, often brusquely and with a certain sort of snarkiness. What was I saying? Going across the bridge and he's drunk, allegedly. Oh, because intoxication and impairment are not the same thing.
Right.
So you can be drinking but not drunk. So like one is 0.07, but you know you're still weaving all over the
place.
Or
you could be high,
which is also impaired. So that would be my guess. Also, the bridge lift is just stupid. Let's have no doubts about that right now. That's just poor design on those bridges right there. They were built badly.
I want to thank the person who typed into the text box, driving under the influence of intoxicants, dumbass.
Like that's the, only one
that's
I.
On, that, and there's no D at the end of
no,
that.
No, no,
it's
isn't.
Not DUIID.
No, and that's Dumas. So the thing about bridges, as I have noted in the past, is this is one of those things where if you get enough education, you get enough book learning, suddenly you forget how to make things work according to common sense. Here's a little FYI from me to whoever the city contracts with to build these things.
Okay, here, someone actually apparently knew about this story. Says he was crossing. The arm came down after he passed, indicating he was the last one allowed to cross. He saw the arm come down in the rearview mirror and thought he was stuck on a raising bridge, and he panicked and tried to back up.
Well, now that doesn't even make any sense, because if he's...
That's probably why they suspected he was intoxicated.
No, but I'm saying if he's... Why would they let him go past the arm?
Well, this was obviously not an intelligent choice on his part.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
It was not a well-reasoned decision that he made.
I feel like I had just the tiniest, most tenuous grasp on what was happening in this. We've now spent so much time talking about a thing that doesn't interest me in the goddamn slightest. But now I have to know. So he's... Okay. I can see you opening your mouth. I just have to ask you a question. I want to try to ask you just one thing here because I got to figure this out in my own head. More information will not help us now. We need to understand the information we have.
Simple yes or no questions.
He was going across the bridge, let's say, heading east.
Yes.
He was
headed westbound.
Okay, so he's headed west. He's going across the bridge. The arms come down.
Mm-hmm.
Is there more than one arm? Well, there must be. There's an arm on either side, maybe?
Yes.
Okay. So he got caught between the two arms.
No.
See, now I'm back to not understanding.
He was driving, and it was going ding, 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 and the cars were going, and he was the last one through before the arm went down. He saw it in his rearview mirror, and he went, oh, crap, the bridge! And then he tried to back up, and he backed up through the arm that had just come
Why
down.
Would seeing the arm come down in his rearview mirror make him think the bridge was lifting?
Because he was completely hammered on Pabst
That's
Blue
an
Ribbon.
Allegation, Don Taylor. You don't know that to be true. That's Don Taylor who said that.
Because he was high on the goofballs.
We live in a litigious society, Don, and Rick Emerson believes all persons to probably be guilty, but not to have been proven guilty. All right. Well, in any event, just don't do that. As I've noted in the past, build the bridges higher. All right. You know, the Ross Island Bridge didn't have to lift up. It doesn't have to raise. You know why? They built it tall enough for the goddamn boat to go underneath it. Build the bridges taller.
I had to cross that bridge in Astoria over the weekend, the really huge, long bridge. And it goes between like Astoria and I think Longview.
Mm-hmm.
And they built that so that most of it goes just a little bit above the water. But on the side by Astoria, it's super, super high.
It suddenly ramps up.
Yeah, it's very high just over there. And all of the ships, including like the big passenger ships that cruise liners would
well,
stop
that's,
there.
But
can
see,
go
but
through
that,
it. So it's very high up there. And then it goes down to like just above the water.
But that's my thing. That's the question. I've asked engineers this in the past. And when I ask them, look... You know, you spend all this time, and you know, and here's the thing. It's just for engineers to impress other engineers. You know, they say, no, this is like how America, the story's been told before, in many, many forums, but this is how America spent like $50,000 developing a pen that could write in space. You know what the Russians did?
Pencils?
Yeah, used a pencil. Yeah. So engineers spend $1 trillion making this sort of mechanized transformer GoBot bridge that can lift up. You know, I bet in Russia, they just build the bridge taller so it doesn't have to move at all. So just, you know, put
And maybe
me in
they have lower
things.
Ships.
That's what I'm saying. All right.
Flatter. They only have barges.
So everything's a scow.
Their bridges don't have to be. A Vancouver man lost parts of his fingers and suffered burns when a homemade firework exploded in his garage, according to family. Fire officials said Donnie Bagley and his 8-year-old son were both taken to Southwest Washington Medical Center after the firework went off. Neighbors said more than 100 fireworks were set off along their street, and they chip in each 4th of July to put on a fireworks show. But some neighbors suggested that this year's celebration got out of hand. This was like a war zone here, said Ray Kerstetter, who lives in the area.
And who has never actually been in a war zone.
There were fireworks on this street and the street next to us. At about 10:30 p.m., Bagley's firework exploded in his garage and rocked the neighborhood. Paramedics took Bagley and his son to the hospital. The boy did not suffer any major injuries and was released, but Bagley remained in satisfactory condition Monday
night. This year,
night.
Bagley's fireworks rock the neighborhood.
Family members said Bagley felt horrible about what happened.
Okay. Well, there you go. So is he missing the fingers?
Yes.
The fingers
are
gone?
He lost parts of his fingers.
Well, that's... Your fingers are a relatively small thing with not a whole lot of moving parts to it. I mean, if you count the knuckles, I mean, maybe that's the tips.
Yeah.
Does it say which hand?
Not in this story, no.
I'm wondering if you were right-handed. So let's see. You set the firework down, right-handed. Wait, so they were just... Had they lit them?
He was in the garage messing around with some fireworks, getting them ready or doing something or pouring more gunpowder into something. I don't know what. But anyway, he was in his garage with some fireworks and something went off in his hand.
It's odd that they would go... I mean, obviously
And
they
very
did.
Loudly, too, because I saw a video of this and... One of the neighbors was saying that it was just this huge blast.
Oh, fantastic. So. Followed by a yowling, like in a sort of a drunken voice, I would imagine. It's odd that those things can just go off if he wasn't actually lighting them, though. That's a little freaky. That's where science will just F you when you're not looking.
There was probably some fire involved in some fashion.
Probably a bunch of Pall Malls being chain-smoked as well.
Possibly.
Yes. All right. Boy, hand me those fireworks and a parliament. Here's Don Taylor.
Leslie Van Houten, a member of the notorious Manson family, goes before a California State Parole Board today for the 19th time since she began serving a life sentence for murder. Van Houten has been imprisoned at the California Institution for Women for more than 3 decades, following her final conviction on first-degree murder charges in 1978 that carried a life sentence. According to prosecutors, Van Houten, who went by Lulu as one of Charles Manson's followers, helped hold down Rosemary LaBianca, while other Manson family members stabbed LaBianca and her husband, Leno LaBianca, to death in 1969. Van Houten told CNN's Larry King Live in 2002 that she herself stabbed Rosemary LaBianca 16 times. Van Houten was 19 at the time.
Now, is she the one that that went crazy and found God?
No.
And by the way, I guess it's a little interesting insight into my psychology that's how I phrase it. She went crazy and found God, not the stabbing and the killing and the hey, helter-skelter. Who's the one that found God? Was that Patricia Krenwinkel?
I think that was Patricia. Either her or Susan Atkins. It might have been Susan Atkins.
I think it is Susan Atkins, who is still not out even though she has the cancer.
Yeah.
And yet they release Squeaky Fromm, which is fine. It's fine with me. Have at it. I don't care. But, I mean, it's Squeaky's my favorite Manson girl, and she's everybody's favorite Manson girl. It's odd that they let Squeaky Fromm out, because Squeaky Fromm, by the way, look, as hot as I find her to be, Squeaky Fromm is like full-on screaming nuts. I mean, and that is... And I'm not saying that diminishes her hotness. That, in fact, augments it, as everyone knows. But you'd think they would release the girl who's not unbelievably insane. And Squeaky Fromm was the one, she was not only part of the Manson family, and still is, by the way. She's like his biggest cheerleader. But she's the one that tried to cap Gerald Ford. And then didn't have any bullets in the gun. So maybe they figure she's just good for comedy value at this point.
Well, Van Houten had a retrial, and the jury was unable to reach a verdict, and she was released on bond for a few months. But a third trial that she ended up having 3 separate trials. In 1978, she was convicted of first-degree murder. She called Charles Manson, when she talked to Larry King, an opportunist of the cruelest, most vicious kind, but she also emphasized that she accepts blame for her role in the crimes. Prison spokesman Lieutenant Robert Pattinson told CNN in 2009 that Van Houten is a model inmate involved in prison programs and a mentor to other inmates in the facility's college program.
We should have a Manson watch on the Rick Emerson show, because it seems like the Manson family, even now, like 30, 41 years later, still in the news all the time. I got to get cracking on that. I'll dig up my love and terror cult records. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Temperatures are expected to rapidly climb 35 degrees today in the Portland metro area. The day began with a low of 51 degrees, and by nightfall, it's supposed to be 87. This will be the hottest day of the year so far. Noon temperatures should be close to 70 degrees, but yes, by nighttime it's going to be in the upper 80s, and then the next couple of days it's going to be like screamingly hot.
The hottest hour of the day is what, Don Taylor?
3 o'clock?
5 p.m.
5 p.m.?
That is when the Earth has, because there's a bell curve, the Earth absorbing heat and the Earth releasing heat, and 5 o'clock is the maximum absorption and retention of heat, God, I'm a nerd, by the Earth before it then starts to go the other way.
Well, the National Weather Service has also reported that temperatures are expected to surpass 100 degrees in the Northeast, prompting emergency services to go into double time from Boston, Massachusetts to Washington, D.C. Heat indexes, which include humidity levels, are forecast to reach 107 degrees.
Heat index, is that the how cold it is versus how, or how hot it is versus how hot it feels?
I think so, yeah.
Because they do that thing during the winter, too, where it's like it's 40 degrees, but it feels like it's 5.
But the wind chill makes it, yeah.
Which I guess is that's, I mean, they really ought to just, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, everything about this this planet works inefficiently. Bridges are too low.
Yes.
The wrong Manson girl seems to be released. And then with that where they say, well, it's 75 degrees, but it feels like 100 degrees. Why can't we just start from now on just saying, if it feels like 100 degrees, it's 100 degrees? You know what I mean? Like, everything ought to be given in a relative temperature from now on.
Because your subjective reality is not true science, Rick.
Well, fine. Nitpick if you like. I'm just saying.
All right. Whatever.
I believe you had some audio related to the heat.
I don't know. Maybe it's only objective audio that only I can hear in my head. Yes, this is people in New York being told. This is the people in New York doing what they do every year, which is reminding each other that it's probably not a good idea to just stay home and be turned into powder by the sun. That you might actually want to drink some water, or I don't know, go to a window or something. So, ladies and gentlemen, the good people of New York. Let me turn this up here.
Check on a neighbor. If you know there's a neighbor in the home, maybe does not have someone going there, you check in on that neighbor. Make sure they're well. If they're not, you call for help.
All right. So there you go. So there's that guy.
Yeah, and you would so totally do that, wouldn't you?
No.
If it was hot.
No,
would
I would not. I don't check
on,
my,
on your neighbors.
I don't check on my neighbors now when it doesn't involve going outside. This is the second cut where they're talking about the... I think this is the one where the guy says if you're vomiting uncontrollably, something might be wrong.
If you're feeling sick, vomiting, nauseous, dizzy, call a doctor and check in with your doctor. If you're feeling really sick and you don't have or cannot contact your doctor, get to a hospital or call 911 and we'll get you there.
Yeah, and get yourself a second and third job while you're on the way to the hospital just so you can actually pay for your emergency room visit.
Well, interestingly... Amtrak has had to set up a contingency plan for its Northeast Corridor routes because of the heat. A statement read that rescue locomotives with assigned crews have been positioned every 30 to 50 miles along the Northeast Corridor and will be mobilized immediately. On Monday afternoon, there was an Amtrak train that was carrying 610 passengers from Boston to Washington. It lost power in New York. And passengers were stuck in the train without air conditioning for 2 hours.
Oh, that would suck.
Police ended up on the scene to help heat-exhausted passengers on board the train.
That would, well, and I guess if you're, depending on where you are, you couldn't get out of the train necessarily. In other words, if you were in the middle of some, if you're on an elevated train track, if you're in the middle of some industrial district, it's not like they're going to, and Amtrak probably, like the airlines, Amtrak probably won't let you just get off the train and wander around because then if you get attacked by a polar bear or something, it's their fault.
Or if it doesn't have power, they might have needed rescue personnel to get the doors
open.
To actually open the doors.
Oh, yeah. And then by then it's too late. It's all cannibalism.
It's just a big sweltering metal can that you're stuck in with 599 other people.
Fantastic. I like what we're saying. Coming up at 1 o'clock, by the way, the Rick Emerson Show today will have, I think since we started this show, I think since we relaunched on the 21st, this will be our first installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. So we have Rick Emerson's The Greatest Songs Ever Made coming up today. We have a top five on the way today as well. I believe we are having a phone conversation with Mr. Aaron Duran. I can't swear to that. There was this whole confusion where I thought he was working, and then he was working, and then he's not, and then he was again. So I think we're doing the phone thing today, and the whole passel of news stories and whatnot. At the Legion of News News Desk, this is Don Taylor.
Washington County authorities are investigating a dog attack that put a 2-year-old girl in a Portland hospital. Sheriff's officials say that the adult Labrador Retriever bit the girl on the head, neck, and face at an Independence Day gathering Sunday just outside Portland. She is expected to survive. Witnesses told deputies the dog lifted the girl by the head. As the dog's owner ran to help, the dog released its bite, dropping the girl to the ground. Officials say the girl had deep lacerations to her face, head, neck, and ears, and that the top of one of her ears was severed. She was taken to Emmanuel Hospital. According to officials, the dog's owner said the dog bit another child the previous week.
Well, they're tasty.
The dog was taken to an animal shelter.
Of course. Have you left off the obligatory "to be destroyed"?
And I would like to point out, what kind of dog was that? Labrador Retriever.
All right.
Not a pit bull. Labrador Retriever.
Would you like to explain your bizarrely defensive posture to the audience?
I own a pit bull. I have owned a couple of pit bulls. I know many pit bulls, and they are lovely, lovely
dogs. Some of my best friends are pit bulls. I mean, I wouldn't want my sister to marry one or anything, but you know what I'm talking about.
They get a seriously bad rap. All I'm saying.
I wish I'd been doing some ongoing drinking game over the years. Every time you say, "and it wasn't a pit bull!" Those people can shut up!
Pit bulls are nice!
Yeah.
You're wrong!
Well, I don't really know. That's one of those things that I just... I have always hewn to the conventional wisdom that pit bulls are evil. But, you know, maybe they're not. Who knows? Or maybe they're evil, but non-violent. I mean, that's also possible.
They're neither. They're lovely, lovely dogs. And they are no more vicious than any other breed of dog.
See, now you say that, and then immediately...
Statistically, they are not responsible for any more dog bites than any other breed.
This is, you know what it is? This is the dialogue of somebody who has been in many, many late-night screaming arguments with somebody drunk in her home about pit bulls.
And who has had to, like, do a whole lot of research to be able to point people to it and say, here are the statistics of dog bites by breed, blah, 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 blah. You know, because people are idiots, and it's just one of those things that, like, pit bull attack! But, you know... If a Shih Tzu kicks, you know, bites someone, that doesn't make the news. That's not sexy.
No, it's not. Although it is amusing. I will say that I've talked to this with. I have the two dogs, and it's if there is a dog on our block that is likely to bite somebody, it is not the Great Dane. There is a Great Dane? I think that must be those are the big ass Marmaduke looking dogs,
yes.
Right? There's a Great Dane. This is the only dog story I'll tell today. There's a Great Dane down the street from our house. And, you know, the only time that Great Dane has ever caused trouble is when my tiny poodle attacked it, lunged at it through the... Because my dog, he's retarded, and he just thinks he's huge and intimidating. And he's not. He's like a small little Kleenex ball. But he was like, you know, I can take him. Let me at him. And he went through the fence into the Great Dane's yard, and the Great Dane just picked him up and just perforated him. Which has not taught him a lesson, by the way, because he's you know, got a brain the size of a kidney bean. So
yeah, the only incident my dog has had, like, ever, like, they happened recently when she was outside and somebody was walking their tiny little black and white fluffy dog, and it went and, like, came lunging at my dog, and my dog just kind of went, "Whoa, dude, hey," you know. So
you should make that noise all the time, sort of Xena style.
Are you saving that one?
Yes,
for...
I am. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A man fishing off of Gospel Rock near Gibson's, British Columbia, reeled in a shocking catch on Friday. RCMP say the man pulled in a beige T-shirt with several bones inside while fishing in over 100 feet of water off the Sunshine Coast. The man was able to recover one rib bone before the other bones sank into the water. The rib bone appears to be human, but police say they are unable to tell the age or the sex of the person it belonged to. Sergeant Stuart Falabrinza told a Canadian television station that the bone does not appear to be from a recently deceased person, and the RCMP are looking at historic files for missing persons cases for possible connections. He also said it's probable that the bones are from a drowning victim.
How would you reel in, if you're fishing, how do you hook, like, a rib bone if it's not from a recently deceased person?
The bones were in a T-shirt.
Oh, okay. So they were. So it was somebody who'd been who was clothed when they were tossed into the river, and then they were. So it was just like a bag of bones at that
point. Yeah, and then he was like, "What the heck is this?" And he managed to snag one of the bones before the rest of them fell off into the water and sank.
That is one of those things that's depending on I would imagine your age and perhaps your gender. Is either the worst thing or the best thing that will ever happen to you in your life. Remember, I was fishing and I found that skeleton that was awesome.
I always really admire, I will say, people who do the right thing and they find, like, a skull in the desert, or they find a rib bone or something like that, and they go to the authorities with it. Because I so wouldn't. If I found, like, a skull, I would take it home and I'd be like, cool, free skull.
Yeah.
I
free skull. Wow. That beats the hell out of, like, you know, come listen to our Costco pitch and get a muffin. Yeah. Free skull. We should talk more, but let's do this story again next hour.
Okay.
Because some of you might have noticed, by the way, that the Legion of News is you know what it is? It's a streamlined program in which we're giving you maximum news content on a per-minute basis. The Rick Emerson Show is not streamlined or efficient at all. It really is like the least efficient thing that's ever existed. And I'm counting the post office there. So let's see. You got to do that skull story again, because I got a story that I'll tell about someone in my family who did not return the skull to the proper authorities. And it's not me for once. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Despite rough weather, the man leading the federal response to the oil disaster believes that the placement of a new containment cap and the deployment of key air and sea resources will eventually stop the massive amounts of oil now gushing from a ruptured well in the Gulf of Mexico. Newly retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen told CNN on Tuesday that over the next 7 to 10 days, officials will be monitoring weather patterns to determine if and when they will try to install the cap.
So I think we have some audio from this guy who's, I don't know, peddling a tissue of lies about the stopping the oils. But that's just my opinion, by the way. See if we can.
The ship itself can handle 60,000 barrels of liquids, 45,000 barrels of oil a day. But the way that it's being connected here is a little restricted, so we're hoping to get 25,000 a day out of it.
Says this character from a Coen Brothers film. So they're trying to, this is a cap, it's like a lid or something?
Yeah, it'll involve unbolting the jagged edge that exists on the structure now, and then a new containment cap they believe will achieve a perfect seal and keep the oil from escaping.
It's not going to work. Here's,
no.
Let me just skip to the end of the page. That's going to fail.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound right.
All right, let's add this to the list of things. I'm going to start doing this every day because this will keep us on track. And this will be good for both programs. This is a win-win situation. We should start flagging the stories that we should bring back, in the Rick Emerson Show, which begins at 1 o'clock, just so I can... so we can talk more about them without sort of getting ourselves permanently off track here.
Well, I will put them over in the Rick Emerson Show pile
oil.
To the right of my computer. So.
All right, so far we've got skull and oil. Fantastic. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Cowlitz County Prosecutor Sue Barr says she's still deciding how to proceed with a December 2009 case of a Kelso, Washington man allegedly shooting a burglary suspect in the buttocks with a hunting bow. Barr says it's unusual to take so long to decide whether she'll charge Scott Allen Schwingdorf with anything. The prosecutor says she's been studying related case law in the matter. Police say that when Schwingdorf saw Galen Lewis Crane prowling around a neighbor's vacant property on December 13th of last year, he armed himself with a hunting bow and stalked Crane for 3 blocks. Schwingdorf shot Crane in the left buttock with a broadhead arrow. Crane was later charged with residential burglary. The Daily News reports that Bauer said local juries have sided with people claiming self-defense in similar cases.
Wait, but he followed the guy
for
the
3 blocks.
Was the guy ever on his property?
No, a neighbor's property.
I don't think. Well, I guess I don't really know because the juries have sided with him in the past. That's one of those things where juries. Not that I disagree. I'm just that's the thing where the juries don't care what the hell the law is. The jurors just say, "Well, I would have done it, not guilty." When it's probably not legal, it seems to me. Like, if a guy's not on your property, you can't just go giving every bastard what they deserve.
I remember growing up in California, the conventional wisdom, at least according to my father, who was an ex-police officer, was that you were free to shoot someone breaking into your house as soon as they entered your home. You know, after that, you probably weren't going to get into any trouble.
I think you and I had the same dad.
But, you know, other than that, I don't know, that may be just one of those weird old wives' tales that men told each other.
Well, my dad was also a cop, and at that time was an ex-cop, and he told me exactly the same thing, and that was in Washington State. But again, that may just be cop logic. whereas, I mean, look, I have no disrespect to cops, but that's got to warp your perception after all. Because look, if you're a cop, as I've sometimes said, if you're a cop, you know, you're a citizen who's allowed to kill other people if you feel they got it coming, which has probably got to give you a strange perspective on things as contrasted with the average person after a while. So... I don't know if it's... We should try to figure out someday under what circumstances I would be allowed to kill someone in my home.
I'm just sort of boggling at the moment the fact that we've worked together, you know, off and on in a few different things for a couple of years now, and it was never mentioned before that we both are the children of ex-police officers.
No, I thought you know that. What did your mom do?
My mom was mostly a housewife. She later became a nurse. She went to nursing school and became a nurse.
Okay, my mom's a nurse. So you got to stop that.
Seriously?
You got to get out of my head. Yeah,
my dad
seriously.
Was a cop basically before I was born, and by the time I was born, he had become a fireman.
Okay, well, see, my dad did not become a fireman. My dad was a cop, and he became a carpenter. My mom is a nurse too. So that's just weird.
That is strange.
All right, let's not think anymore about that. Because okay. Then it's like we're gonna it's gonna lead into some weird thing where we find out that like we were both that we were both put into a basket in the reeds and set adrift on the Nile River at the same time or something. All right.
Several employees at a maple rest home. Why is it at a maple rest home?
Is it the town of Maple?
You know, it might have
Yay.
Been. Except it's all capitalized, so I don't know. Several employees at a Maple, Massachusetts rest home stopped a man who allegedly tried to rob an elderly resident and held him until police officers got there. The suspect, 36-year-old Daniel Martinez, allegedly pushed the elderly man to the ground and stole his wallet with $400 in cash out of his pocket Sunday night, according to a news release from Springfield Police. The manager ran to Locust Street, found the suspect, and took the wallet back, which now contained only $200. Martinez allegedly spent $200 on drugs.
This is like some Metamucil story problem.
2 hours later, Martinez came back to the rest home and approached the same victim again, yelling, "I need more money."
Wow.
This time, the manager and several others jumped on Martinez and held him there until officers arrived.
Oh, man, I hope they just gave him such a raping. That is awesome. You don't want to screw with old people, by the way. You screw with old people, and if you screw with their money, old people know how to hold on to a nickel, let me tell you.
And it also is apparently extra illegal if you rob someone who's old, at least in Massachusetts, because this guy was arrested and charged with unarmed robbery of a person over 60 and assault and battery of a person over 60.
In other news, some guy in a nursing home had $400 in his wallet.
Yeah. I just love the cojones, though, on a guy who robs somebody and then comes back and tries to rob the same guy saying, "I need more of your money."
See, I don't think it's that. I really do think, it's just that the longer you are a criminal, the dumber you become. I think it's just, It's like being a criminal, I think, is sort of like, it's like falling, it's like in a video game where you fall off the ledge and you land in an acid bath. And it's like the longer you're in there, your health just goes down in increments of 30%.
He robbed the guy. The guy had money. He then used some of that money to buy drugs. Now he was under the influence of drugs.
He was
and
fortified.
He thought, where can I get more money?
Wait a minute.
That guy.
Well, and this... Goddamn, people are stupid. I'm not trying to encourage theft. I'm really not. But it just hurts to think down to that level. Why would you not just take all $400 the first time?
Well, he did. He did. He took all $400, spent half of it on drugs.
I thought you said that the guy's wallet the second time contained $200, implying that the burglar or the thief only stole half the money.
Now you're confusing me. Yeah, he only took half the money.
Yeah,
you're right.
So
the manager found the suspect and took the wallet back. Well,
which only had to... Why would you not just take the wallet with you, for
he
God's
did.
Sake?
The manager chased him down and snatched the wallet back from him.
Maybe before he could get
all
$200.
But apparently it was after he'd already spent $200. Okay, there are weird holes
everybody
in this story.
Everybody in the story is dumb. All right. That doesn't make it. Just ask. Whatever happened to just give me the money from your wallet? Look, if you got a gun, make the victim do the work. That's what the gun is for.
Give me all the money. You keep the wallet. I don't need the wallet.
The upside of having a gun is then you can make people do what you want. You write that down, kids.
And plus, you're not caught with someone else's wallet, which is evidence. You just have money, and that money could have come from anywhere.
Yes, that's right.
We would be great criminals.
Let's do that now.
Okay.
All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
I believe it's time for entertainment news.
This is your entertainment news for Tuesday's Legion of News.
She said he wasn't intimate. He said she wasn't faithful. She called him a fame whore. He called her jealous. For weeks, the nasty breakup of the bachelor couple, Jake Pavelka and Vienna Girardi, has been fought in the tabloids. In their latest round of sparring, the pair were back in front of the reality TV cameras where it all began. "Unfortunately, that's what one of our arguments looks like," Pavelka said after a weeping Girardi stomped away from their pre-taped reunion at the end of Monday's episode of The Bachelorette. The Bachelor host Chris Harrison moderated a poolside debate between the couple, who called off their engagement last month. The 32-year-old pilot from Dallas and the 23-year-old Geneva, Florida resident quarreled over such issues as where they should place furniture in their home and why she gave an interview to a tabloid about their split. Normally, when couples who meet on The Bachelor end their made-on-TV relationships, their publicists release a statement announcing an amicable parting. In this case, it became a public mudslinging fest. Girardi lashed out at first by appearing on the cover of Star magazine alongside the headline, "Jake's a Monster." Pavelka then struck back on the front of People magazine above the headline, "I Don't Trust Her." Girardi later dodged infidelity allegations on Twitter, while Pavelka unloaded about his relationship regrets in an interview with Extra host Mario Lopez.
It is impossible to overstate how much I loathe People.
And so here is a little excerpt of the two talking on The Bachelor, the Bachelor breakup special last night.
"I am sorry that I went about it the way I did, but I know you, the real you, and I knew you would do it if I didn't.
You don't know me, and I wouldn't have done it, and if you...
If I don't know you, then
please stop interrupting me.
Whore!
The thing is, I would have never done this to somebody that I love. When I got down on one knee, again, I got interrupted. Good Lord.
I'm done with this. You are the greatest."
At that point, she
stomped off. Her tears taste like wine. That's fantastic. That was the most fake-sounding crying I've ever heard in my life, by the way. I was about to say that entire conversation consisted of like five words, where they were just sort of saying the same thing back to each other in different sentences. But then it became like every couple's counseling session, I think, that you've ever seen in your life, where it's, "Don't interrupt me. She's always interrupting me." God damn. And so where do they – I don't mean this in an overarching sense, but I mean really honestly, where do they get people for this show?
Apparently there is just an endless supply of decent-looking, somewhat photogenic people who will debase themselves in any way just to be on television.
Don't I know it? But I mean, specifically for this show, The Bachelor, though, in other words, he wasn't a known person before this.
No.
Is there something to recommend him? Is he wealthy? Is he a captain of industry?
I have never seen an episode of The Bachelor, so I know nothing about where these people come from, how they cast it. I mean, from what I understand, it's a casting call. They put out casting notices for real people to do these things, and they say they want you to be between a certain age, and they want you to be good looking, and then they pick a guy.
Well, here's the thing that I mean. It's like with any show that is a whole bunch of people competing for one thing, it's just a given that the whole bunch of people is just a casting call, that everybody uses sending an email or a postcard or something, and they interview you and they pick you. But I'm always more intrigued with how they find the one person that everybody is competing for, because it seems like that's not a guy that you just get at central casting. I mean, it seems like there's got to be something interesting about him, because some of the shows, but like there was the Joe Millionaire show where it was, you know, that, or there was the although did you watch the what was the I mean, I'm really dating myself with the Joe Millionaire thing, too, because that was, it seems like an eternity ago, but it was only a couple of years. And I think that was around the time that I kind of got off the bandwagon of those shows. Although I did watch, what was the show where it was like it was last year where it was the guy, and it was like, but it was billed as like, fat chicks look for love.
Oh, that, yeah.
But there was a girl from Portland there.
I remember that, yeah.
And I remember we tried so hard on the Emerson show. We tried so hard to watch that just because, you know, to be relatable, and she was... And about like three episodes in, we all just kind of admitted that like we hate the show and none of us are watching it.
Yeah.
And then the Portland chick got bounced off the show right after that, so I didn't have to watch it anymore. But it's just loathsome.
I can't watch any of the shows. I just can't. I'm a fan of some of the reality shows that involve people who are good at what they do, like Top Chef or Project Runway or something like that. But if it's just these weird, self-deluded people having manufactured drama, I just have no interest.
I'm going to tell you, here's a great idea right now. Somebody I knew years ago on radio, he told me, he said, what was his name? His name is Mike, and he said, no, you know, if you have an idea, even if it seems crazy or ahead of its time or if it's just too weird, write it down, because someday this society will be so effed up, your idea will not seem crazy anymore. And that was like one of the most sage pieces of advice he ever gave me, that what seems just insanely like immoral or unethical today, tomorrow's reality program.
So at some point, my reality show, I'm a Midget and I Married a Corpse, will be a huge hit.
Yes. Yes, it will. That's way better than my idea. I was just saying, but you know what somebody in Hollywood will eventually do? It marries America's love for reality programming with our desire to milk every dollar out of an established franchise property. I am, of course, talking about Saw, the reality series.
Oh, yeah.
I would watch that tonight. On pay-per-view, even. Doesn't matter how much you charge. If you made Saw, and what is it that Tobin Bell guy going to do after that? Nothing. You know, I saw him in the West Wing the other night. They're like, hey, here's the chief of staff of whatever. And he goes, hello, Mr. President. And it's like the Saw guy. And I was like, well, his career is over. Because that's immediately the first thing I thought of. You make Saw into reality programming, I will watch that. I will watch that forevermore. So that it's coming. You write down the day and time I said this. It's going
to
happen.
Oh, and the Chubby People reality show is called More to Love.
That's right. Yeah. I don't know who won. I don't know. And the guy himself didn't seem like he was any real prize.
No.
They never are.
No. The thing that was so offensive about that show was that they didn't actually give you any sound bites or clips of the women who were taking part in that who had any shred of self-esteem. All the time was given to the women going, no one ever wants to date me. And if I don't win this show, I will never find love.
Yeah.
Because I'm 40 pounds overweight. So I'm a grotesque freak. You know, and it's like, it was just so insanely offensive.
And, well, and which we all know isn't true. Because you and I, look, everyone knows this, that self-esteem and like outward, external, like really aggressive vocalizations of self-esteem, that's inversely proportional to a chick's weight. And we all know that that's true. You find some, like as you talk about all the time, and it's absolutely true. You find a girl who weighs 98 pounds and a girl who weighs 400 pounds, and the 400-pound girl is, I'm damn sexy. And you're like, well, all right, fair enough. Have at it. I mean, you know, right, wrong, it seems to be not a problem. But you're right, on that show, it was always like, how are you? My life is terrible. And it was a whole thing. You got the feeling they were all just going to go home in some sort of weird suicide pact if they didn't land the guy who himself just looks like he looked like a porky Evan Handler.
Yeah. He was not all that.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I myself have always been what is considered overweight to some degree or another, and have spent the bulk of my adult life as a fat girl. And I'll tell you, I've never had trouble getting a date.
No.
So when I saw these women on the show just going, no one's ever asked me out, all I could think is, well, there's a reason for that besides your size, sister.
I mean, that's the truth. I mean,
it might be because you're whiny.
Yeah.
And self-absorbed.
Maybe it's because you're an unlikable shrew. Huh?
Yeah.
How about that? All right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
For the seventh time, 47-year-old former pop star George Michael was arrested for a driving-related wrong.
For what?
For what?
For what time?
For the seventh time.
Okay, I thought you said the 47th time.
No,
for a second.
He's 47 years old.
All right.
This is the seventh time he's been arrested for a driving-related crime.
Okay, I was going to think I fell asleep and missed a few there.
After police got reports that his Range Rover had crashed into a Snappy Snaps photo printing shop in London, following his attendance at London's Gay Pride Parade,
wow,
he was taken into custody at a North London police station under suspicion of being unfit to drive. Michael posted bail and will return in August for a court date. Michael just regained his driving privileges last year. They were suspended in 2007 for 2 years for driving while unfit due to drugs. He was accused of driving into 3 parked cars and driving off without first telling the car's owners.
I love George Michael. It is very telling about the British legal system that you can actually drive your car into something, and then when they book you, it's on suspicion that you were unfit to drive. I think we would assume that you were unfit to drive. Then it just becomes why. What was the actual reason for that? But they're not even really sure. You know, like it might have been the Snappy Shack's fault somehow. It might have been asking for it or leaping out of the
traffic.
I just
like that they have Photoshops called Snappy Snaps.
Yeah, excellent. So the seventh time, boy, that guy just looks bad too. You know, I saw an interview with let's put this on the list of things we should talk about next hour.
Okay.
I saw the best interview with George Michael. And I honestly, all I'll say is I saw an interview with him and I honestly don't know how I feel about it. He said something that I'm very undecided about. So we'll talk about that next hour. Here's Don Taylor.
Lindsay Lohan is scheduled to appear in a Beverly Hills courtroom today for a probation revocation hearing that could end with her either headed for jail or off to her next movie role. The hearing is the culmination of several missteps by the 24-year-old actress, whose probation for a 3-year drug and alcohol case was revoked in May after she missed a hearing. She faces an increasingly impatient judge who has seemingly grown tired of the actress's inability to complete the terms of her sentence or appear in court on time. The hearing Tuesday morning is likely to feature testimony and evidence about her conduct and progress with her probation. Los Angeles County District Attorney spokeswoman Sandy Gibbons said a prosecutor could still decide not to seek jail time for Lohan.
Well, they never seek jail time. That's the thing. That's how you know this is going to end this way, is because nobody ever goes to jail that I want to go to jail.
Well, if she is ordered to go to jail today, she's going to be taken into custody immediately.
That would see.
We will know by the end of the day.
That would make. What time is that happening now?
I don't know what time.
I'm going to look online. Hold on, let me check our news ticker and. I'll say that because you couldn't make me happier. It's not that I even have any grudge against Lindsay Lohan as such. I just like to see celebrities put in jail. I don't care who it is. I don't care what they've done. Guilty, innocent, doesn't matter.
Well, you know, you see some people, though, and you get that sense of, like, you know, they really need a slap down to just figure out where they've gone wrong. And it's like the fact that you know, even humiliated as she must be by, you know, public opinion of her, that's not enough for her to figure out that maybe she's making some poor choices.
I just don't. I don't like how she is. I don't. Here's speaking for all men and perhaps some women. Let me just say that I personally think she ought to be punished just for making herself less hot over the years and exponentially so. Because there was a time when she was really, really, really attractive.
Yeah.
There's no going back with it. It doesn't matter what she does now. It's like Amy Winehouse. There is no. You could give Amy Winehouse, like, a brand-new cyborg sex body, and it, like, I would never... There's no way I can ever find... When you see somebody picking at their scabs in public, like in a restaurant, you've gone past the line. And so with Lindsay Lohan, she just... God, I saw her in that Georgia Rule movie.
She's got that thing going on with her legs, too, where her legs are so thin that it's like, you know, bones with a little bit of sinew stretched over.
And it's
so sad to look at someone like that and think, wow, she looks at herself in the mirror and goes, I don't know, not thin enough.
She's like one of those Olsen kids. Like, one of the Olsen twins had like the little bird legs. And you're just like looking going, no, do not want. I mean, they just sort of, you know, they like a bad Mr. Pretzel kind of a thing going on. So, no, I'll pass, thank you.
Do we have audio to go with the
I do, as a matter of fact, actually. Let me bring this up here. So this is... Let's see. I think this might be the judge. I'm not entirely certain. Let me just see here. This is the judge talking. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait. Hold on.
Judge Revelle could send the 24-year-old actress to jail for up to 6 months if...
Says Dennis Pitzenberger, apparently.
Judge Revelle could send the 24-year-old actress to jail for up to 6 months if she decides the actress did not comply with the probation requirement that she attend weekly alcohol counseling sessions. And the judge indicated that she would look at every date that Lohan missed a scheduled session and her reason for missing it.
So as though there's any doubt about that, I think we all understand the amount of things she went to and did not go to. Oh. And here's Dante.
Mylene Klass, host of the Sky One British television show The World's Youngest Daredevils, told the Sun newspaper that she was horrified to find six-year-olds cage fighting when filming her new TV show.
Is this the thing you were telling me about this morning?
Yes.
This is already... I've never even seen this show. I don't know what it's like.
It hasn't been on yet.
I don't know anything about it. All I know is what you were describing today. And I have to tell you, it is already the best thing that's ever been on television before I've even seen a single episode of it.
The singer-turned-presenter who traveled the world for the new show told The Sun that she came across a 10-year-old lion tamer and an 11-year-old matador. Yet watching tiny kids fighting in a huge cage in Tennessee, she says, was a real eye-opener. So shocking. The thing that shocked me most, she says, was the way they were being watched by adults and they had bikini-clad girls holding up scorecards.
I love this country.
It was basically sex and violence, but with little kids. Class admitted that even though the children were banned from punching each other, it had been hard to witness. Watching them do the chokehold, as it's called, was pretty tough, she said. And there were some shocking moments when they'd get angry with each other and start doing moves that weren't in the rules. They were getting hurt, and there were tears. The star, who is a mother to two-year-old Ava, added, I thought I'd seen some things in my life, but nothing prepared me for this show.
So, but the kid which are in Tennessee, is this going to be on American television? Please tell me it's so.
Ah, no, this is a British show.
Well, what the hell is that about? They come here, they film our kids fighting in a cage, and
apparently there aren't any. Well, it says she's been traveling the world, so they probably also went to like Mexico. 11-year-old matador, 10-year-old lion tamer. I'm thinking Belgium.
I don't understand how it's possible this isn't airing in America. You're telling me Americans wouldn't watch that?
I know. Well, believe me, someone is looking at this going, why didn't we think of this? And we'll have an American version on TLC in 6 months.
We're putting all of our resources into this stupid Saw program. God damn it. Get me cage fighters. All right. Don't forget, by the way, the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock, featuring, I think, our first installment since we launched on the 21st, our first installment of the greatest songs ever made. We'll also be doing today's Top 5. Top 5 coming up later on. We'll have, I think, you said we have the mother of all corpse watches.
We do indeed.
And I have not really had, I've not really been privy to much of the news going on today. I got up and I had to go film Outlook Portland today. By the way, just real quickly, the guy I interviewed for Outlook Portland, he works at a software company called Avatron, and he's awesome. He's just like the best interview ever. It's not going to air for a couple weeks, but it was one of the best interviews ever. And I said, this is a great. And we were talking about computers, and he's like, well, my first computer was a VIC-20, and it was it had a tape drive, and it was 16K, and it was exceptional, and it was just great. And I said, dude, you are awesome. You got to come on my radio show. And he said, I don't know. You might if you do that too much, you might just find that your audience becomes sort of nerdy. And I just, there was no way I could even respond. I just kind of went, well, that's a risk I'll have to take.
You haven't ever listened to my show, have you?
No, the thing is, I realized that immediately I was like, he doesn't know, and there's no way I can really convey to him how that's not an issue. So, what was I talking about? Something. Oh, so I haven't had a chance to read the news. I have no idea what your mother of all corpse watches is.
Oh, it's awesome.
All right, so that's coming up at 1 o'clock on the Rick Emerson Show, which begins at rickemerson.com here in just a skosh. This is John Taylor.
That is all of the entertainment news, by the way.
There's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Macy's flagship store in New York City's Herald Square is again being criticized for allowing hazardous conditions to exist, this time after a 4-year-old boy's finger was completely severed by a wooden escalator. On Friday, Maxley Gel Tejada, accompanied by his mother and father, dropped a bottle of water at the base of the first floor escalator in Macy's and reached down to pick it up. A sharp edge of the escalator sliced through the pinky on his right hand, and his horrified parents quickly recovered the finger and packed it with ice. Max Lee was transported to Bellevue Hospital, where doctors reattached the finger, but the boy reportedly may lose substantial motion. His mother, Natalia Gel Tejada, stated surgeons, quote, couldn't recoup some of the veins that make the finger move, unquote. But it will be a few days before doctors know whether the procedure succeeded. In recent years, two other children have also had their fingers injured by old escalators in Macy's, in use since 1927. In October 2005, a 4-year-old girl lost her index finger when she fell at the top of the third floor escalator, and a 2-year-old boy nearly lost his left thumb, which was partially severed in December of 2006.
Wait, is this all at Macy's?
This is all at Macy's on their old
1920-something
escalators.
It's just bizarre that they wouldn't. I mean, I was going to ask how much it costed to fix an escalator, but apparently too much. Apparently less than the cost of the settlements.
Well, according to the Department of Buildings Violations, the Macy's flagship store has been guilty of shoddy escalator upkeep for years. In just the last 2 years, records show Macy's owes more than $48,000 for failed escalator inspections. If I were their CEO, I would be very disappointed, said Councilmember Eric DeLon, who chairs the city's Building and Housing Committee.
You know, here's the thing. It just seems like, I don't know, maybe I'll fix one of those every now and again and just see if you have fewer severed fingers. And then, if you do, then it's a bit of a wash cost-wise. Escalators are freaky anyway, though. I never knew if it was an urban legend about the thing, people get sucked into an escalator, your shoes get caught. But it seems certainly that your shoelaces could get caught in an escalator. And if you're a kid, you're jamming your fingers into everything that's big enough to take them and some things that aren't. So, it seems like it's just a matter of time till you're fingerless.
Well, this is also one of those things that you don't really think about. Because think about how often you go places where you ride escalators. You don't ever think about, whether or not they're actually, properly upkeeping, doing the upkeep on those escalators. Because in New York, they said here that since 2008, the Herald Square Macy's has been cited for dangerous razor-sharp steps, worn-out chains, tripping hazards, and failing to report an escalator accident. New York's Queens Center Mall has had violations of failing to report an accident and also broken steps and worn rollers. And the Midtown Manhattan Mall has multiple open violations, including damaged handrails. So you kind of got to wonder, you think about it, it's like, let's say, Lloyd Center. Did they have, have they been doing proper upkeep on their escalators? Do we have people here in Portland who inspect escalators?
Wait, here's the other, and this may have been in the story, I may have missed this part. When you say proper upkeep, in other words, is there some sort of a like a keeps your fingers from getting lopped off guardrail that they didn't replace? I mean, what upkeep is required to keep kids from getting their fingers severed?
I might be wrong, but I believe that newer escalators are designed in such a way that it's more difficult to get your hands jammed in them. The way the stairs actually sort of collapse into each other as they go under the thing. But like this Macy's escalator, for example, it was built in 1927, and like they said, it has razor sharp steps.
Yeah.
So you know, you like this kid bent over to pick up a bottle of water at the top of the escalator, and the thing just like lop.
You know, I have two things. The one of which is related to the other. First of all, I was going to ask, why don't they just make escalators that, you know, where the steps are effectively like carpeted, and then the carpet flattens out when it hits the bottom. You know, sort of like a. In other words, so it's like a regular conveyor belt that just has a band of flat rubber or, you know, whatever, like an assembly line. They just do that, and it wouldn't, you know, and then as the stairs flatten out, the rubber that is the top of it just flattens out and it goes in. But if not that, why would you ever make them razor sharp? I mean, that's the other thing. I'm not even saying, like, if you don't want to cover them in shag carpeting, I understand that. But it seems like there's a middle ground between they're covered in marshmallows and they're razor sharp.
Well, that's kind of the case with technology as a whole, isn't it? I mean, when people first invent things, they think, wow, this is awesome.
Let's make it pointy.
Well, and they often don't think about, you know, they're so absorbed with, you know, this great innovation that they're not thinking about all of the myriad ways it could kill people. I think people and companies who manufacture things worry about that a lot more now, because we've become a much more litigious society over the last, you know, say 80 to 100 years. But, you know, it's like, I think around the turn of the century and in the early parts of the century, you know, people just of the last century, people didn't really think about that.
Well, you know, what's weird
much.
Is when you, you know, you go back and you look at like the way that cars were built, you know, in the 50s and 60s, where they just, you know, there's these great stories about Robert McNamara, who, you know, everybody sort of remembers for his role in the Vietnam War. But Robert McNamara is the reason that there are seatbelts in cars, because Ford kept saying, I don't know, people keep using our cars and they keep dying. It sucks. What can we do about that? And he said, well, perhaps everything on the inside of the car could be not made of metal and razor sharp and pointed and jagged. And then also,
I mean,
how
like
a seatbelt?
Things like safety glass and windshields have been like an innovation within our lifetime.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that the steering wheel for the longest time, like directly underneath the horn, was this thing that was just shaped like a huge spear. And so, like if you just, you know, bumped into a curb ever so slightly, well, I bet it was, and then it just went right, and you would lean forward and suddenly, you know, it's like dad kebab.
And there were no headrests behind your head. So you'd hit something and you were almost guaranteed whiplash.
And the seats were all like this really slick vinyl guaranteeing that you would rocket toward the dashboard, which was made of metal.
And as children, when you had to like sit on those seats in shorts in the summertime,
and get third degree burns on the backs
horrible.
Of your
so,
legs.
So, you know, it's not surprising, really, that
good times.
That 1927 escalators had razor sharp steps.
Yeah, I suppose. And with that, we will bring the curtain down on another exciting installment of Legion of News. Legion of News brought to you each and every day by PDX.FM and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer, Bruce Agler. Chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. Thank you for listening. This has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.